Hey there, Caitlin.
Hi, Rebecca.
How are you today?
I don't know.
Okay.
To be honest, we are on day two of Election Watch. I think the whole country feels very charged and feels very tense. And the only thing I can enjoy right now is lesfic. So this is almost the perfect thing to be doing right now. So Rebecca, what do you and I get to do to distract ourselves from the garbage fire that is the presidential election right now?
So I'm sitting here with you, which is delightful, but also sharing the screen with us tonight is Katie Williamson. Hi, Katie. How are you?
I don't really have a word for it.
Yeah.
I really don't have a word for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can sit, the three of us, in this collective non-verbiage feeling and...
Yes. Yeah. It's just like, I think I've been kind of pontificating on it all, you know, like just totally distracted by it all day. I mean, I work from home right now, obviously because of the pandemic, but I can't believe, I feel a little bit hopeful because there's still a chance, but because last night my wife and, you know, I was trying not to watch it. And finally, I asked my wife, you know, what was going on. I said, I don't even want to look. I'm scared to. And she says, you should be. And I was like, oh. I was like, oh, my God. So from that point on, I was checking in, you know, every couple of hours to see, you know, I was fully expecting to wake up this morning and hear that. I don't even know what to call him. I have so many names. The Oompa Loompa was still president. So, you know, and just that, the prospect of that is just frightening. My wife was like, we're moving out of the country. Yeah. And I was like, we can't afford to move out of the country. You know how much money that costs to move to a different country? First, we're not even welcome anywhere, first of all. So.
Well, speaking of moving, so a little bit of a serious note off of this. Are you guys doing okay after Zeta?
Yes, we had a lot of wind. We had our power was out for a couple of days.
Okay.
You know, which I tried to prepare for that. I got this huge cooler, you know, to put some refrigerator stuff in just in case. And then I got a couple of other things just to, you know, because I had just ordered like a lot of food from this website called GTFO Vegan.
Okay.
So I wanted to preserve it.
Uh-huh.
So like I was like more concerned about that than everything else that was in fridge. So
it's the specialty items. You've got to treasure those. As two people who are both food driven, I can say Caitlin and I have been through a few storms together, and we also like would save, you know, the favorite foods and the special foods. And we're like,
yes,
oh, you know.
Thank you. There you go.
Yeah, it's important. Well, Katie, just because I know there are a handful of people who listen to our podcast who are sort of along for the journey and they don't know the players in the game, so to speak, I was wondering if you could quickly sort of do like a short introduction of yourself, maybe your most recent publication, something that people might not know about you, and just orient some of our listeners in that way.
Okay. Well, I guess you could say predominantly I'm a romance writer. I used to be with Ilva, and then I decided to go with Dirt Road Books. Nothing against Ilva. They're great. You know, I just wanted a change. But I consider myself, I don't write the regular run-of-the-mill romances. It's not, you know, nothing against sanitized lesfic or, you know, the sweet lesfic. You know, there's a market for everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I may be in a mood to read that kind of stuff. I haven't been lately, you know, but still, you know, I would say what I write has a tinge of realism, very relatable characters, very down to earth. They're not, now don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm sure I've written some books where, oh, she's beautiful and blah, 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 and all that crap. But but for the most part, they're a little unconventional. I mean, you know, like in my first novel, Blurred Lines, one of the main characters had a potty mouth. I mean, big time potty mouth, you know. And the love interest, the other main character, she did not curse at all, you know, because that's just who she was. But I wrote her in a way where she appeared to be on the spectrum. Because I work with people, you know, on the spectrum. So I kind of collected a hodgepodge of behaviors and put them in her. So you could say she was. So regardless, my characters are a bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, more realistic. They're characters you kind of want to meet and go have a beer with. I mean, pizza, you know, things of that nature, you know?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask what got you into writing romance and especially lesfic?
Well, I started with fanfic, actually. Okay. I want to say back when Xena... I don't know how old you ladies are.
Oh, we know fanfic.
Okay.
Well, Caitlin says fanfic. I remember watching Xena as new episode.
Okay. So I was going to say that was quite a while ago. So I wrote a Xena fanfic for a couple of years. I want to say for the last 2.5 years of the show. So I started in that fandom. And And then I wrote, my very first book was actually called Forever Mine. And it was with L Book, which is a company that's no more, you know, no longer around. And the book is out of print. Thank goodness that it is. Because I've vastly grown as a writer since then. But yeah, you know, so, and then I moved over to Brazilian Isles. And my first novel is actually loosely based on a huge fanfic that I have been working on of the same name, you know, back when Resilient, the height of their popularity, or, you know, what have you. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got discovered. And it seems like I'm so used to telling this story, but I didn't submit anything. I actually had the publisher come to me. I get after reading Blurred Lines, which was on AO3, mm-hmm. you know, because it was like something I had been working on for almost 2 years. And it was not that long after I finished that she DM'd me. And I was like, this has to be a joke. It has to be a joke. This is not for real. And she's like, I'm going to give you the website. I'm going to let you know who I am. You can check it out, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. I said, I'm going to talk this over with, you know, my girlfriend, who was my girlfriend at the time, you know, because I didn't believe anything she was saying. So I was like, I'll get back to you in a couple of days. So after I got off a DM with her, you know, I went to the website and I kind of leafed through it and I was like, okay, so she's legit. And the rest is kind of like history. I mean, you know, I hadn't even thought about being published again at that point. I was kind of satisfied with writing fanfic because, you know, with fanfic, you get that immediate gratification, mm-hmm. you know, that you just don't get from, you know, having a book on Amazon. I mean, you know, whatnot. I mean, yes, we enjoy that feedback, negative or positive or, you know, but I was digging that, you know, the instant gratification, you know. So to me, it kind of helped me as a writer to figure out what I needed to work on and what I need to improve. And now I'm working on my seventh book, loosely working on my seventh book, I guess you could say. So I'm going to get there eventually. But yeah, I mean, I haven't written fanfic, I think, for, I want to say, 4 years or something like that. And unfortunately, I still have some unfinished work on AO3. God. Yes, that I still get emailed for, and I'm just like, oh, please stop. It makes me feel so bad. And I had every intention of finishing, and I tried to go back and read it, you know, to see if I could get those juices flowing, you know, for those characters or whatever. Nothing. Absolutely.
I feel so guilty. This is the best Schadenfreude ever, listening to both an artist who's like, I can't quite figure out the inspiration, and Caitlin, who desperately has a story on a fan fiction site that has just not been finished for years. And
as a reader. Yeah, so I'm geeking out a little bit here because I was hardcore into fanfic. That's how I found lesfic in the first place. And we did an episode about my like root story, which was on fanfiction.net's like sister website, which is fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm published over there too.
Yeah, well, and so there's one story that's the sequel to my root story, and it hasn't been worked on for maybe 11 years.
Oh my God.
So pardon me, like, smiling like a banshee in the background, but there's just something about both sides of the story happening in front of me that it's just the most delightful, like, I need popcorn. This is just the best love out ever. Before we dive even further in, I want to start with you mentioning the immediate feedback that happened when you were writing mm-hmm. fanfic and on these sites versus what this publication and kind of the, I don't want to say conglomerate, but the bigger world and the inner tide and like companies mm-hmm. and things like that, like Goodreads, you know, being part of Amazon and those tie-ins for mm-hmm. communication.
Mean Reads, you mean?
Mean Reads, yes. The place where everybody gives it a 3.7 because just a solid number is too hard for them.
I know. You don't have to tell me.
You can stand by your convictions, but not the number rating you give it, you know, and everybody's going to come at me now, but honestly, like the ability to tangibly review people is not easy, and I don't pretend to know how to do it. That's why we usually just gush about work here and then have questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm not claiming I know how to do it, but I was wondering what that community looked like as you shifted from having that space where you had communication with the people enjoying your work to then going into more recognized publishers, and I use this term, you know, within mm-hmm. the world as like as much as recognized lesfic publishers are, and then the various websites to get your books, to order them physical copies or e-copies, and what that kind of did for you as a writer in navigating the one-on-one community versus now you kind of have a couple things in between you mm-hmm. and that community. How did that start to influence your writing? Because there's four and a half books in the Cops and Docs series.
Yeah. So that little short story.
Yeah,
you could say it was that. 4.5, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, not to undermine a story as a half a story, just kind of it's in the center of all the other actions. So, how was that experience for you?
Well, it was really hard at first. Because, Blurred Lines was my baby. I mean, you know, I had been working on it for 2 years. It was blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, I got blocked for like 6 months, you know, where I didn't write anything on it. And then I had this inspiration that, okay, this is how it's going to end. And this is what's going to... So it was very hard, I want to say, to transition from fanfic to published work in that... I don't even have the words to really explain it. I didn't have that community, so to speak, anymore. I actually talked to a lot of those women, you know, on quite often, you know, through email or, you know, whatnot. And so it was like, and I didn't just cut it off cold turkey, but it was different because I had to put all of that energy into rewrites after rewrite after rewrite. So that's where a lot of me was going. So it was hard not to have that interplay, that playful banter that we had. I mean, because I had been writing fanfic for years. I mean, you know, so I wouldn't say I have a huge fan base, but it was pretty big. I mean, you know, and I thank them every day. Some of them still follow me, and, you know, I still hear from some of them every once in a while. They'll go back and read some of my old stuff that's on fanfiction.net or AO3, and they'll drop me an email. Oh, I still love this story. I wish you were still writing fanfic, but I still love your books. So fortunately, that following has helped me book sales-wise, mm-hmm. you know, because... You have all these readers who were aware of my writing style and, you know, what I wrote about and, you know, and all that, who wanted to, you know, come along for the ride, so to speak. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I think I would like to say my writing style kind of changed from book to book in some small aspect, in that there were completely different characters, mm-hmm. you know, and I had to do what I had to do to make them stand out on their own. So it had to be different. You know, the core thing I would say that has been in all my books has been the family dynamic, you know, families and friendships and relationships, you know, that those systems that surround us and either make us better or make us worse, you know. Long story short, it was hard. It was hard. And but I am thankful that, you know, a lot of that fandom followed me and, you know, helped catapult me. You know, I've had, I want to say, all my books except for two have hit number one, I want to say. So, I mean, with their help. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so yeah, but I do miss that instant gratification. And I'm not for everyone. I mean, you know, I'm just not. And I know that. And I've noticed that people either love it or they hate it, because it's such a departure from what they're used to. You know, my last book, my most recent book, Big Girl Pill, I still get, you know, reviews from it every once in a while. It was a good book, but the casual drug use and the cursing just kind of threw me off. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, you know, oh, well, I mean, you know, to me, I was writing about 20-year-olds mm-hmm. who had just come out of college. Mm-hmm. So casual drug use, drinking, you know, just partying. I mean, you know, they're going to do that. And I think they kind of lost sight of that. But I've gotten some of the strangest complaints about my work. I've gotten a review that said they got to know the characters too well. And I was like, what does that mean? I don't understand what that means. I mean, you know, so it's gone, you know, from one end of the spectrum to the other, you know, and I still have that core, that strong core of people who say they will read anything that I come out with, you know, even Pink, which was not a romance. I mean, you know, not to toot my own horn, it was one of the best books I've written. And it was not romance. It was like drama, you mm-hmm. know, more than anything. But, you know, they still read that. I mean, you know, and enjoyed it in, you know, some aspect. Like I said, I'm forever thankful for that huge sect of people who has continued to follow me mm-hmm. because they have made a difference. And I think, without them, I don't ever get a lot of bad reviews, but when I do get the bad reviews, they're so negative. I mean, and they're just, you know, they could tear you down. I mean, you know, as a writer, it can really tear you down. So having them, you know, and it was funny because I remember when I got the first reviews for Blurred Lines, you know, a lot of them were great. Then a lot of them was like, you know, the cursing and blah, blah, blah. And I don't understand. And people don't talk, you know, you don't write dialogue like that in books. And I was like, you mean how people actually speak as opposed to complete these long, drawn out sentences? You know, I have the tendency to do dialogue how I actually talk. I mean, how you would have a conversation with people. Yeah. And unfortunately, people were not used to that. I mean, you know, so it was just like, and I was like, if you look at it, you know, sideways, you know, and gauge your own conversation that you have compared to what you're reading, it kind of, mm-hmm. it coincides. I mean, you know, so, but I had those readers come to my defense and it felt good. And I think it's one of the things that kept me writing and wanted to keep me writing. Mm-hmm. You know, bad reviews here and there, you know, sometimes a bad review from a major reviewer or a ho-hum review, you know, or whatever. But I would like to, to say at this point, my skin is pretty thick and I find a lot of the reviews hilarious. I just laugh. And so it's just like, okay, which weird ones am I going to get this time? I mean, you know, so I find them more entertaining than, you know, I don't get that swelling in the pit of my stomach when somebody said, you know, this is trash. I mean, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't get that swelling in the pit of my stomach anymore. I get like,
okay. Do you feel like, so you've written a number of books and it sounds like they've sort of ranged from slightly different reception, you know, like you've explored a lot. And the landscape of what it means to publish in this industry, I feel like has changed a little bit, especially with the internet, with Goodreads, with Bookstagram and all that. What are some of the biggest ways that you feel as a writer putting out these works that it's changed for you since you've started this, since you've made that initial switch?
I think I had to get now... Unfortunately, with less sick publishers, you have to do your own marketing. I mean, you know, a lot of the time you have to do your own marketing. That was something I was not used to at all. I mean, you know, so it was just like, I got this email with all these ideas about, okay, you could do this and you could do that. And what, chatting with who and doing what? So
you do it completely. Sorry, just to clarify, you're saying that you do all of it alone? Like the publisher doesn't have like a
They do a little bit. I mean, you know, they have an ARC group, advanced review copy group, you know, that they send stuff out and, you know, they make announcements on their own Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, sure. You know, things of that nature. But for the most part, we are in charge of the marketing, you know, and that includes, you know, all those lesbian groups on Facebook. I had no idea about, first of all, I mean, you know, so I was just kind of thrust into the deep end concerning that. And I had to learn quick. I mean, you know, so, and unfortunately, I think, and I'm on Twitter more than I am on Facebook, but at least nowadays anyway, but I think during that time when it was first happening and the popularity of that series was, you know, coming down the wire, I kind of felt like I had to be on all the time and, you know, being this person that people thought I was more so than being me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I would say when I got to Between the Lines, which was the third book, which features a Black main character. That, just including that, was a milestone for me. Because this is another story I've told through various podcasts, because when I first started writing professionally, the default is white. Yeah. I mean, you know, it just is. I mean, you know, don't get me started on it. We could have 10 billion podcasts about that. But so I thought I was in that box and I had to stay in that box in order to be successful. And, you know, and I get to the point when I had the idea for that book and I was like, okay, do I have to clean up my language on this show, by the way?
Oh, good God, no. Fuck okay. No. There, I did it for you. Fuck no.
So, okay, so by that time, I was like, fuck it. I mean, you know, I'm just gonna just let it all fly and just do what I want to do. Write a book that I want to write with Black characters about Black families and about how in our culture, you know, despite what's going on within your family, you're supposed to take care of each other, you know, and I wanted to relay all of that and wrap it all into the present that is an interracial relationship. I mean, you know. So by that time, I was just like, I'm just going to write the book that I want. I mean, you know.
I'm so glad you do. And I'm heartbroken to hear that, like, it was a negotiation at any point. like, I'm glad that you weren't brought into Yelvut as the token Black writer writing a Black character for them to have a Black book. But also the fact that it was three books into your quartet or quartet and a half or whichever, you know, that this started to come in, and then what that negotiation looks like. And as you just said, if you're responsible for your own marketing, you're now also having to lift up a voice that should be represented just fine, but now you're becoming the person lifting up the character within the series. So it's a lot of, it's like creating the Tower of Babel to some people, but instead you're trying to dismantle that and create a common language. And I don't envy you, nor do I know, I will never understand that. But as an outsider and as a younger person who craves these words, I don't know how to say any words, but it's heartbreaking because I don't know how to dismantle that system more myself. And I'm, you know, trying to learn. And
I've been trying to do so. I mean, in various ways. I mean, you know, you guys saw all the ruckus I caused on Twitter. I mean, you know, it was just,
what was that ruckus, Katie? I mean,
I was just so fed up, and, you know, and I still feel like I was beating a dead horse. It was just like brick wall, like this. And I mean, I still, after everything, I don't feel like, even after we had the GCLS think tank, you know, Zoom call, whatever, I don't feel like anything was accomplished. You know, in fact, and I'm going to say this because I talked to, a friend of mine, Celeste Castro, was, you know, part of that conversation as well. And we talked a lot about it, you know, afterwards. And one of the biggest things was that, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Melissa Braden. She's the sweetest person ever. I mean, I've talked to her or, you know, whatnot. So this is not a dig against her or Georgia Beers or, you know, any of them. You know, they're great people. So we actually had one member of that Zoom call say, you know, well, when white, prominent white writers start including minority main characters, well-rounded, you know, it'll be more accepted. And I just kind of like, I was like, I had to think about it. And, you know, it was just like, the more I stewed in it, the angrier I got.
I do not know what your group looked like, and I don't want to speak to it. Full disclosure, I am a new member of GCLS. I joined this year for the first time. I'm learning. I've been on other discussions and volunteering. But I can't help but wonder, as a person who's been on the outside a few times coming in, what your panel also looked like for age inclusion. Because I feel...
there were some younger people and some older people.
That's
good.
They were
all Black, and there were some, you know, just, well, most of them were Black. Some of them were just, you know, other people, you know, persons of color.
So were they, I don't want to edit this out, but I'm going to trip over my language. The once other writers, whatever that whole statement was, is the argument in the marketability of selling products, which will then bring in more. This sounds like a company meeting, not a.
I know. The whole point was, you know, the whole thing is, you know, everybody screams for diversity in lesfic, you know, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And when it comes down to it, it seems like they don't want it. And when they do get it, they're like, oh, I don't know. You know, it comes down to, you know, I'm not going to read that book. It has a Black person on the cover and I can't identify with that experience. You know, my whole argument is it's a romance. We all fall in love the same way. I mean, you know, we all have similar stories. Girl meets girl, blah, 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 dating, blah, blah, sex, blah, 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 you know, whatever. Laughing, getting closer, you know, it's universal. So when I hear something like, we can identify with it, and that's why we don't read, you know, BIPOC authors. I mean, you know, that's why they're not as prominent as, you know, as some of the other ones, you know, that are held in high esteem as well. They should be. They're great writers as well. I mean, you know, but But yeah, and you know, my argument is if you can read about witches and ghosts and werewolves and you know, all that kind of crap and can identify with that, mm-hmm. that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's bullshit. That's just another aspect of racism right there.
Right. Yeah. Do you feel that you have a responsibility as a Black woman and within a population that is already overtaxed to educate instead of write, that your books have to be good instead of being books? Like, they have to be things people immediately want to return to and read again instead of being a book that somebody ingested and sat on for a while and didn't immediately react you know to?
Rebecca, I don't care.
No, I don't. I think that's awesome. I'm just listening to you say that. I think, well, one, let me, so I messed up. Let me hold myself accountable.
Okay.
You don't have to care, which is phenomenal that you don't, because what it sounds like is there's a lot of pressure for both popular artists to figure out a way to negotiate narratives they've never negotiated before mm-hmm. well, as well as for BIPOC authors to create like the perfect version of something so it gets mm-hmm. great ratings.
Because, so it's watered down enough.
So if people's intrinsic racism or bias that they need to unpack within themselves is placed upon your book, it needs to be so phenomenal that it can get past all that systemic racism that we all are trying to attack every day.
And I don't give a damn. I mean, you know, I'm just like, I'm not here to educate you. I'm not. I mean, that's something you should want to do for yourself.
Right.
I just write women loves women fiction. I include bisexual characters. I have nothing against that. I have nothing, you know, if I thought I could write, include some trans characters and do them, I would do so, but I feel like it would be a detriment, you know, to tell that story. And mm-hmm. I'm not able to.
In your current work, you're doing a spinoff, an additional to Big Girl Pill, right? Yes. We're getting Rachel's story.
Yes, Rachel's
story. Awesome. So I'm stoked. I can't wait. But if I remember correctly, and pardon me if I mess this up, everything's jumbled this week. I believe you've mentioned one of the other characters being navigating within the gender spectrum without being cisgender. And you speak frequently about the importance of having sensitivity readers. So if you are taking on things outside of your known narrative mm-hmm. that you can't just speak about in a way that everybody else is like, okay, they know enough, mm-hmm. including other people into that. And I can't help but wonder, again, as what you're talking about and what this conversation is, as a person who's read your books and loved your books, both having sensitivity readers so there are more BIPOC characters and we are getting these stories without also overtaxing and burdening BIPOC authors who are already trying to get their story out. So you're trying to write your story, promote your story, and many of you, and I believe you've said you do this, are also sensitivity readers. Mm-hmm. At what point is there an alleviation of like the weight that is being asked for you to carry all the time within this community?
I don't think it ever comes off. I mean, you just kind of learn to navigate it. I mean, you know, bless their hearts. I mean, you know, when I raised that big stink about racism and GCLS and, you know, all that stuff.
I appreciate you for using bless your heart. Like,
I am Southern. So, I mean, my inbox was just flooded. My DMs were flooded. I mean, you know, and I'm just like, I don't have the time to, I can't speak for every Black person in the world. I cannot. I mean, you know, and I was very adamant. I was very clear in expressing that. I mean, you know, I can't speak for everybody. I can only tell you from my experience about what I'm seeing and what other authors have told me and how they feel. I mean, you know, and I can't really speak for them either. You know, it's just a general, you know, in a general way. But yeah, I mean, it was just like, no, I can't, you know, no. Yes, you're doing it all wrong. This, I mean, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was that question of, oh, where can I go to find BIPOC authors? And I was like, Google? Facebook groups?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I said, I'm not going to work for you. I mean, you know, I'm just not. I mean, at this point, there's such a divide, I think, between BIPOC authors and, you know, publishers who are mighty white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's such a divide there that a majority, you know, have advocated this way, and they don't even bother to submit anymore. You know, they go to publishers who all Black publishers, which are great too. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's also that you can't just put out, oh, I'm tweeting, we're looking for submissions for this and blah blah blah. You have to go where people are now. Because you've negated them, you've denigrated them, you've told them their stuff is not good enough for so long, they don't pay attention to you now. So you have to go where they are, apologize in some way or make concession in some way. I was wrong. We messed up. You know, I want to improve my publishing house. You know, I want it to be really diverse and, you know, blah, 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 you know. And then it goes back to the, well, maybe we should have an award for just BIPOC authors. And I was like, no. I said, you're separating. You're saying that we cannot be as good as everybody else, so you have to keep us in this category so we can't compete, you know, with everybody else. And, you know, I was like, don't do that. I said, don't do that. That's not what you want to do at all. I mean, you know, which is the place where everybody seems to go.
Yeah.
You know, let's give this Lifetime Achievement Award to my... you know, to this person, or, I mean, if from what I understand, they had something like that this year. They had some kind of Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that. Not that she didn't deserve it, mind you. But the sad part is that she had to wait all that time to get recognized.
Yeah.
That's the sad part.
As newcomers, and Caitlin, I'll volley this to you some, in the process of the two of us talking about enjoying these books and eventually leading to this experiment that you are now very kindly participating in. Thank you so much. And in packing and like figuring out where to find more information, where to find community, and then feeling really empowered by that community and now being within that to where sometimes people deflect to us as if we have any real information. We're not even a full year into the pod. We're 12 or 13 months into the two of us really in depth talking about books together. But there seems to be so many gates within it. And then trying to push down those gates, we're reminded that we're new, but also there are people behind us who are like, well, we found it because of you. And like, as we're in this community, and obviously people want this community and what to do within it, I find myself both in trying to make sure I never poorly represent Caitlin in any way, because we're tied to this pod together, as well as wanting this community to grow, that there seems to be a lot of there's a lot of gatekeepers, but there's no actual gates. So
the old guard, I like to call them.
Yeah.
That's right. But they come from people our age too, who are unpacking
I know. It doesn't mean necessarily old. I just mean they are the gatekeepers to all that is holy and less sick. I mean, you know, those, you know, far be it, you know, that something doesn't quite fit in that box, you know, those are the gatekeepers that are still there. And I don't understand why they are, because there's an audience for everything.
Exactly. You know? And if I can volley that to Caitlin, you do quite a bit of research on like the queer experience in the U.S. and what we consider LGBTQ queer and identity now, how we found each other, the communities we built. Yeah. And I wonder what your perspective is with how hard it was to initially create these spaces, and now maybe what we're mirroring with like choosing who we let in.
Well, this is, and I'm quiet because I'm like, every time something like this comes up, it's maddening, because even with, you know, the queer people in the United States, we have this great story of like, you know, we've banded together and we threw the brick at Stonewall and we fought for our civil rights and we did all of this stuff. And even within that, even from the very beginning, mm-hmm. it was a racist system. It was a classist system. It was sexist. And we have made concessions as we've sort of tried to gain rights and tried to gain foothold in popular culture. And we've all, like, this has gone on for years and years where we've said, like, oh, well, we'll come back for you. Like, let us get X, Y, Z. We'll come back for you. Like, you know.
The trickle down theory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's something really fascinating that's happening right now, especially where there's a sense as queer white people where I think the gut instinct when someone says, hey, you are being racist and you are participating in a system, like an institution that is upholding racism and white supremacy, your gut instinct is to say, well, I'm not privileged because I am a queer person in this country. And Rebecca, you can, but like,
she's not saying that. I don't think she's reading that way.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
Like, and my oppression is permission in some way.
It's such a mindset that we, I think, are just starting to unpack as white folk, and how that mindset has carried over into anything such as lesbian publishing houses, the podcasts that are popular, the websites that write about books. And it's a shame that we can't look at our history and not only celebrate it, but see, like, this is where we fucked up. And, like, we have so many opportunities to grow and learn and, like, be better. Like, let's have the actual society that we claim that we want. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca and I have talked a little bit on the podcast, but a lot, the two of us, about how we love the world of lesfic, but it's also, like, so frustrating, and it can be hard to navigate.
Yes.
And as two people not writing but participating in the reading world, I think, and interject, please, Caitlin, but we've hit this level where enough people kind of recognize who we are, but we're also new to the community. So we're expected to navigate and listen in certain situations and then be the resounding megaphone in other spaces. Mm-hmm. And just depending on who is in front of us or who's writing the email is which reaction is expected. And trying to flip between those two things of, you know, this is new to me, this is a community that I'm inviting myself into and I want to be a part of, as well as we want to lift up all these books, but we see all the cracks because we are people who spend a lot of time consuming, and we spend a lot of time seeking out. And when we go to look for the books that we're talking about, and we go to look at blogs and spaces and authors, so much of it is combing through the same system over and over again, trying to figure out what's falling through. Mm-hmm. And then approaching somebody with those questions is problematic unto itself.
Mm-hmm. So they get defensive. Yeah. There's that level. And, you know, it's just like, no. I would never, you know, it's, and like I said, the whole subject of what you just, I have a degree in sociology. One of my degrees is in sociology. So this is always so fascinating to me that as a people, a culture, a group, that we are a microcosm of the larger society, and that there is racism, sexism, classism within us, and that the fact that we've been perpetrated on, even as part of the queer community, is learned behavior for us to turn around and do it to people of our own community. Because when it comes down, I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care. You know, to me, I was born this way. It took me a long time to figure it out. I believe a bisexual individual was born that way. I believe a young boy who realizes that he's trans and trapped in a body, they were born that way. It's not a choice. It's not, you know, just something to piss people the fuck off. I mean, it's not, you know, it's nobody wants to navigate those waters because they're treacherous, they're dangerous, they have sharks in them. So nobody does it you know, with like, oh, this is just a choice. You know, I want to do that. So the fact that someone in our community has the unmitigated gall to tell people bisexual people should be writing lesbian, or, you know, I had one of my Girl on Fire episodes was with DJ Small, who is, I love him, you know, I haven't talked to him lately, but I love him, and, you know, so I thought there was going to be a lot of flack because he identifies as male, you know, writing lesbian. You know, but he's been writing lesbian for a long time. I mean, you know, so, you know, and I was just like, you know, come on to my show. And he was like, and I was like, no, I said, I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I see, I don't put that trans friendly, bi-friendly thing on there just for show. I mean, I have nothing, you know, don't get me wrong. We all have our all prejudices and, you know, our preconceived notions and stuff like that. We all do. I said, but, you know, I just want to listen. I'm here to listen and learn, you know, from you, whatever you know, you want to talk about. Like you guys have talked about, I want to give you a safe space to make you feel like you're you, you know? So it tears me up, the turf crap. And I'm like, we're all, it pisses me off every time I think about it. I mean, because that whole saying of it's not pie. There's not an infinite, I mean, there's not a definite amount of rights to go around that they're going to run out before you get some. And I don't even understand that mentality where they think that's how it works. We're always going to be considered a minority. There's always going to be, you know, that fear, that homophobia, that biphobia, or whatever. It's always going to be there, you know, because we're different, you know, whatever you're going to call it. But so we're always going to be in that, you know, pocket of existence. Mm-hmm. No matter what. I mean, we can progress, you know, yes, we can get married now or whatever, you know, but if Trump wins the White House, not for long. I mean, you know, as women, we have the right to make decisions about our bodies. If Trump wins the White House, not for long. So the thing is, what we have to remember is, as queer folk, we're part of sometimes a double and triple minority.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. I mean, you know, I'm a woman, I'm Black, I'm queer.
Mm-hmm.
Three strikes.
You're right? Educated in Southern, which confuses everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, I say education with the caveat, like, I understand education unto itself is a privilege, and that's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not undermining that. But I'm very aware, as a person who grew up in the South, that they're like, oh, of course you left. I was like, it doesn't just work that way. And and they're very, like, this, it's like everything, it's very complicated and full of every type of person. So one thing that draws me to your book so much is the language you use. I have slowly been trained by professions and other things in my life to pull back. I have a very...
We both have sailor's mouths, and we both have really thick Southern twangs and sayings that both of us have like gotten rid of through.
We've like conditioned ourselves out of, which is a certain type of acceptance level that when we talk one-on-one, it is something that we think about frequently. Say it again.
I don't hear twangs.
No,
mine is more prominent because I moved back here, but when I lived in Asheville, I didn't sound like this.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, when I moved back here, it kind of started building back up again.
Yeah. So when you were on Sick Girl,
and I was like, oh my God, I sound like that.
When you wrote Big Girl Pill, did you really kind of cater into what that time in North Carolina felt like? Because you have the wedding out that way. So
it's in Asheville.
Yeah, so in Asheville, did you pull back from your time in North Carolina to kind of create that?
All of the little eateries and
Haywood
Road and all that. I mean, you know, the mountains in the background, that that blue grayness, you know, that you can see from far away. The weather. I mean, you know, the weird looking people. I mean, you know, so all that. Of course, I had, since I hadn't been back there, you know, for quite a while, I had to, you know, kind of research a couple of things and be like, oh, is this still here, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And so it, I kind of had to refresh myself a little bit. But yeah, I would say being in Asheville was an enjoyable time. It's kind of quirky. And it reminds, in fact, it reminded me a lot of New Orleans, as a matter of fact. I mean, you know, don't
just
don't,
not flat.
My wife doesn't hear me say that. But she's from New Orleans originally. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, I try to, and I wanted to make that setting kind of a character, but not a huge character. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just to make it seem like, you know, it kind of meshed well with who the characters were, you know, and just their surroundings and how they kind of bled into it to where it was like you couldn't tell it apart. I mean, so it just seemed like they belonged wherever they were. I mean, you know, if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense.
I really love the banter in that book. I love that the jokes aren't always explained. Sometimes they're just for the characters, and we're to assume like those. Your books are hilarious. You're very funny. You write amazing.
I think I'm hilarious.
Surrounding people, you were.
My wife does not agree.
Full in your respect of you. You are fucking hilarious. It's so good. It's really good, and it's. I really like that it's messy. I like that not everybody kind of just has like a level to get to, and then somehow magically they've all figured it out. So it's just a little bit
on the next page. Like that. Yeah.
I right now those books are comforting because nothing feels comforting.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can.
But sometimes I really do want that. I think there are things that are messier in love than just love. I think people are messy, and people are ever. I don't even want to say evolving because that says that there's growth. Like we're just.
And sometimes people don't grow at all.
Yeah, it's a chaotic experience to be human.
Nina's mom did not grow at all. I mean, you know, and people were kind of pissed about that. I mean, you know, I was like, you saw she was a hardcore racist. I mean, she was a homophobe. She's not going to all of a sudden, just because her daughter steps away from her life, all of a sudden do a mea culpa. And I've changed, of course. That's how it should have been in your HEA, you know, all the strings tied together and, you know, everything has a pretty little bow on it. But I don't write that way. I mean, you know, like I said, it has an essence of realism in it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and yeah, she was over the top nasty. But then again, it wasn't too over the top. But can't you just see somebody like that? Mm-hmm. We sometimes know people like that. Yeah. I mean, that's a Trump supporter. I mean, you know, right there. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So it's, to me, it seemed over the top, but it wasn't really. I mean, you know, Nina's mom was somebody who was trapped into appearances. I mean, so that's what she was concerned about the most, you know.
Which is indicative of how she was raised. So she is a product of what she felt she needed to do to be the person. Like, where her power is derived from was from a broken system she decided.
Yes.
Exactly. She's now deciding to still participate in, but she was taught to participate in at a younger time before
she
needed to
decide if she wasn't going to.
Can we ask, and we do it every episode, but I'm going to volley to Caitlin. Caitlin always gets to ask everybody this question.
So can you remember, like, the first lesfic that you read?
Yes.
Okay, tell us.
It was, and I hope I'm saying her name right, Sandra Scopatone? You guys ever heard of those?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm writing this down, so go ahead.
This was back in the early 90s. I mean, you know, like mid-90s or something like that.
Oh, I'm familiar with one of these, Happy Endings Are All Alike.
Yeah, yeah, and that I can't remember the exact book that I read, but I know it was one of those. And it was my kind of introduction to, I mean, it was light stuff. I mean, it wasn't anything intense, you know, like I write, I mean, you know, or that's okay today, because, you know, back then, I think people were so happy to be published, they didn't want to alienate anybody. So they kept it, you know, on the nice and clean, you know. But yeah, that was my first real introduction to, and I liked it. I mean, you know, it was a little different in that I like mysteries. Uh-huh. I mean, it was a mystery. You know, it was a little bit of romance, a little bit of mystery. I mean, which is like the perfect combination for me. If I could write a mystery, oh my God, that would be perfect. I don't think I'm capable of that. But yeah, so I remember that. And in fact, I had a fanfic story called Linger. I want to say that was Xena AU, where I actually bring up the Sandra Scapatone thing within the thing, and the writer actually emailed me, and I can't remember the circumstances of how she found out that I name dropped her, but she said kind of sent me a nasty email.
What?
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, don't use my name or, you know, say anything about my books and your fan fiction. It was like, I called her a lesbian writer or something like that. And she just got offended by that. And I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, okay. I didn't understand at that time. I mean, you know, so I mean, now, you know, okay, I guess I can understand how that could be, you know, I'm a writer. I mean, I'm not just, yeah, you know, or whatever. So, but I remember seeing that email and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And I want to say I read other books in that series, but I can't remember. It was like 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So yeah. So, you know, I was so happy to see the email. And then I was just like, really? I was like, oh, man.
I feel like so many creators who name drop their, in like people like that get emails like that. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many artists that I've worked on for another project who there's a famous letter from Scorching, Biting Letter that was sent. Mm-hmm. To a contemporary artist that was like, how dare you?
Oh my God.
I am an artist. I am a photographer. Don't call me a lesbian photographer and do not call me a female photographer. Like, you can, and
we can be temperamental.
That, yeah, I mean, people are human. People can, yeah. But I'm trying to imagine what it would be like to receive something like that. Like, my insides are kind of like shriveling up a little bit at the thought.
It hurt. It hurt. I remember that. And I kept the email for a long time before I deleted it. But it was just, you remember that feeling I told you about, that hollowness, that squeamy thing you get in your stomach? I remember reading that email and I had that feeling. And I was just like, I was just so hurt. I mean, I was just like, wow. I was like, to me, I was paying homage to her.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't see it that way, you know, so it was just like a kick in the teeth kind of, sort of.
Mm-hmm. So horribly just sad. I don't have better language, so pardon me, that the terminology we use to find the things that we see ourselves in are also the words that are used to undermine us as legitimate.
Yes.
So I don't know how to, like, I completely understand not wanting those monikers because they make you less than.
Yes.
But also,
and I understand that now, but you know,
yeah, moment, yeah, but even now, like when we do hashtags and stuff, we do back end with those words because that's how people find you. That's how communities continue to build up their. I have such mixed feelings about the marketing component.
It's a strange dichotomy. I mean, it's a very strange dichotomy. I mean, you know, and you know,
How do you dismantle the system while still inviting people to join the protest?
It's very odd. I mean, you know, and with this new book, like I said, I've been loosely working on, I was very hesitant. I mean, you know, and that was kind of weird for me to include, you know, a gender fluid character. You know, don't get me wrong. Before I figured out who I was this somewhat feminine individual. I mean, you know, and once I figured out who I was, I'm kind of way over there toward the male end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, so I do have some experience on, you know, but I was like, I want to make this authentic. I mean, not that I couldn't do that anyway, but I wanted to do it right, I guess you could say. And that just seems like it's not even the right word. I wanted to make it authentic. I want somebody who has that, you know, where some days, you know, they identify as male, you know, and some days they identify as, they read this book and they go like, yeah, I feel like that. You know, I interviewed some people on Facebook, and the sensitivity reader that I've used, she's been very candid, you know, about, you know, this is how it happens for me, you know. So I want to put those things in there. Now, are they going to alienate some people? Probably. Mm. Probably. Do I care? No. Because I'm going to tell that story. Because when I started the book, I was like stuck, and I was like, something's not right. It's something's just not right. And I couldn't get things to fit, or, you know, the voices correct. And I slept on it, and I woke up the next day and I was reading something, and I was like, oh my God, this was wrong. That's what's wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I was like, so she's, you know, she identifies as male and female. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it's his, you know, and him, and then other times it's her and, you know, she and her. I mean, you know, getting that right was like really important. I mean, you know, like I said, it's gonna alienate some people. I mean, I've alienated people before, so it wouldn't be new. I mean, not everybody's okay with that. I want to say by the time I finish with this one, I think it would probably be my favorite, mm-hmm. and maybe my best, just because as I was, as I'm writing it and as I'm going back to read through it, is such a departure from what I've written before.
You've given us these little gems, almost like a sneak peek of your work in progress. And I want to be cognizant of the time, because we've had you on Skype now for over an hour.
Oh, yes.
So we like to finish up with sort of like, what are you reading, or what media are you consuming? Like, how are you getting through these days when you're not supposed to be writing?
Yes, Animal Crossing. that has been my crutch the past couple of days. I'm a gamer anyway. Okay. So ever since the pandemic, you know, a lot of things have happened to me, you know, to my family within it. So, you know, grieving for a long time. And I still am. I mean, you know, with my mom dying and everything. So it was me trying to find something to help me stay stable.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm going to get a little bit personal. There was like a megaton of anxiety. I mean, you know, just so much. I mean, you know, that I was just like, my God, it was not to where I couldn't function, but it was just like, wow, what is going on? So I had to figure out something. I mean, you know, with my mom dying and making everything real for me, it was trying to find those outlets and everything. And I've been a gamer for like years, but I hadn't been, I guess with work and everything, I hadn't really been into it like I had been. So I kind of got back into it. I fired up my PS4 and my Xbox. You know, I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2. I've had games. I bought games that were new, like in 2018, 2017, that I never finished. Uh-huh. So I was like, okay, I'm going to work on those. So I've been doing that. I do audiobooks, you know, because I drive to work on the weekends and stuff for a couple of hours. So I do audiobooks, you know, during that time when I'm driving back and forth. That's been a big thing. Megan O'Brien is one of my favorite authors for whatever reason. I mean, well, come on. Yeah. So, you know, I'll revisit some of her stuff, you know, like time and time again. And I'm patiently waiting, you know, because I know she's not writing right now. She's stressed about the whole election and the state of the world and everything. So, but she did agree, her and Angie did agree to come on Girl on Fire. So, yeah. Jay is coming on the first Sunday of November. I mean, December. I'm sorry, December. So, yeah. So, I haven't listened to an audiobook lately, but it's not all Lesfic either.
Yeah.
It's not. I started listening to The Stand, but it was a little bit too real.
Yeah.
It does. So, it ages in a way that you kind of hoped it wouldn't. Yeah. Same is true with like The Fog and a few other ones.
Yes. So I had to stop. So, but I've been listening to that new one by Neil Gaiman.
The Norse mythology one?
No.
Are you doing the audiobook of Sandman? It's so good. As a person who's read the graphic novels too, the dramatic reading of the entire cast of characters is phenomenal.
Yes. I pre-ordered it and I still haven't finished listening to it. But so I've got sort of like a range of stuff that, you know, I listen to from time to time again. So I don't just do lesfic, you know. I don't do heterosexual romance. See me sneer my nose up. And it's funny because I used to read voraciously the Harlequin romances when I was a kid. They always used to piss me off. Because the men were so mean. So mean.
Always.
You know, always. And I'm just like, I don't understand. So, wow, we'll fall in love with that. So, but I digress.
We want to keep geeking out with you. Like, I know where to find you, but could you tell other people how to find you so they could, you know, talk to you about some of these things and learn some more?
Yes, I am on Twitter at RizzlesLover72. I think it's LOVR72. On Facebook, I'm KD Williamson Author. And I actually do have a website and a blog I probably need to visit more often. KDWilliamson.org. I have like a backlog of blogs you could probably go through and find some entertainment, you know, with in some form or fashion. I mean, I'm on Twitter more than anything.
Great.
And who's this little one who just joined us?
This is asshole Finn.
Oh, he's so pretty though.
I talk about him quite often.
Oh, well, we will definitely tag your website, your Twitter, and your like links to get to your books as well in the show notes. If that's more convenient for anybody, just click on over to description, scroll down. We'll have it just at a one click away. Besides just really enjoying meeting your cat right now. I can, as always, only speak for myself, though I feel it's safe to say for both of us. Thank you so much for giving us your time tonight.
It's been fun.
Whatever this is, that is.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some heavy conversation, but I mean, it's been an enjoyable heavy conversation. It's, you know, it's nice when you talk to somebody of like mind. I mean, you know, who's on the same side as you are, and you can relate to them. So.
So, don't stop holding me accountable. You know, if I do something, I want to learn more.
You guys should know by now. I mean, the kind of the gloves are off concerning all that. So I call a spade nowadays. So it's just like, oh, this whole pandemic thing I have no censor anymore.
Yeah.
It could be because I'm almost 50 too. I don't know. One of those things. I don't know.
Oh, well, thank you. This has been such a joy. I don't know what the right word for it is, but this has been such a heavy but good good conversation, and I really appreciate you. Oh, and your cat is so cute right now.